The world's largest meat packer, JBS Meats, was hit by a ransomware attack this week. JBS is a Brazilian firm that processes around 20% of America's beef and pork. The attack forced the Australian JBS operation to temporarily shut down on Monday. Australian-based organisations are being targeted and paying ransoms at a higher rate than other countries, apparently. Though it's based on an admittedly small survey size, the US cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike says two-thirds of Australian organisations had a ransomware attack in 2020. That's about 10% above the global average. One in three paid the ransom, an average of about $1.25 million for each breach. And apparently, a quarter of those who did pay the ransom still didn't get their data returned. Ransomware attacks have hit companies like the logistics company Toll, the Nine Network, the New South Wales Labor Party, hospitals in Queensland, healthcare providers in Victoria have all been victims. Now, the official advice is to report attacks, but don't pay the ransom. But many businesses see the choice as pay up or go under. That's what America's Colonial Pipeline did recently. They paid a $5 million ransom. So can authorities stop businesses from paying ransoms? And what help is there for Australian businesses to try and recover without paying a ransom? Fergus Hansen is the director of the International Cyber Policy Centre at ASPI, the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. Good morning, Fergus. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a slightly terrifying pleasure. Fergus, what does the Australian law say about paying ransoms for cyber attacks?
Well, one of the reasons why people are paying ransoms is because this is a really grey area of Australian law and an area that hasn't been tested. So there's notionally some areas where people could potentially be prosecuted, Division 400 of the Criminal Code, potentially sort of money laundering crimes that people could be committing by paying a ransom, but it hasn't been tested in Australia because essentially the laws were written before people thought about, you know, ransomware being a possibility that would be encountering down the track. So we've got this sort of grey area of law, and you know, when you ring up the Australian Cybersecurity Centre and say we've been hit by a ransomware attack, what should we do? As you said, the official advice is not to pay, but it's a really hard decision, I think, for lots of companies because if you don't pay and your systems are locked up and you're stuck for months without being able to operate, for lots of companies, that means going broke.
Sounds like it'd be insult to injury to then get prosecuted under Australian criminal law as well if you did pay a ransom. Fergus, you mentioned ringing up the Australian Cybersecurity Centre if you do have a ransomware attack. Is there actually an obligation on organisations to do that, to disclose when they've been attacked?
Well, there isn't an obligation. So at the moment, this is another problem that we have, is that it's not a legal requirement that you let anyone know that you've been hit by a ransomware attack. People often would want to ring up and find out what they should do and, you know, what will happen if they do pay a ransom and all those sort of things. But because there isn't a mandatory requirement, we don't know the full extent to which, you know, ransomware is a problem and how many companies are being hit, and we don't know how many companies are paying ransoms, and we don't know how much they're paying. So all of that means we have this sort of policy vacuum. We do know, when you talk to companies that help companies recover from ransomware attacks, that quite a large proportion of them are paying, and that is a widespread problem. And you mentioned a few stats in the beginning. I think that sort of roughly squares up with what companies in this sector say is happening. So we know it's a big problem, but we don't have the exact data. So that's another area where there's an urgent need for compulsory reporting. Even if it's not made public, it's just disclosed to the ACSC. It at least gives one part of government and society an overview of what's happening.
The Australian business that's probably paid the highest price so far is Toll, the logistics company. Their operations were severely disrupted, caused problems for customers as well, but they didn't pay a ransom. What effect did the Toll incident have on other affected businesses, perhaps who are willing to pay a ransom?
Well, Toll did the right thing by not paying a ransom. But they also paid a very high price for that because it took them a very long time to get their business operations back on track. A lot of their customers got really frustrated because they couldn't deliver the service that they're used to toll providing. So I think for lots of businesses, unfortunately, this was a bit of a cautionary tale about what happens if you don't pay a ransom.
Right.
And of course, that's a terrible policy outcome for Australia because it encourages more businesses to pay ransoms, and that just creates a larger market in Australia for cyber criminals, which then encourages more of them to attack more Australian businesses. So we get in this vicious circle that we can't get out of unless we have a change in policy from government.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Fergus Hansen, Director of the International Cyber Policy Centre at ASPI. Fergus, the increase in these attacks seems to have spawned another market for companies that act as brokers between the company that's the target of a ransomware attack and cyber criminals. Who are these brokers? What do they do? How legit are they?
Well, yeah, it's a really interesting feature of this market that there's these notionally legitimate businesses that act as these brokers between cyber criminals that have locked up your company's files and the company itself that has its files locked up and wants to try and get them back. And so they act as this sort of intermediary that negotiates the terms of the unlocking and the payment and facilitates that payment between the company and the cyber criminals. As I understand it, you usually have somebody that has an insight into the cyber criminal group that is attacking you. You generally get a sense of how well they negotiate and what you can drive them down to. And there's usually very large opening bids, and that gets whittled down. And the extent to which you can whittle down the price really depends on how exposed you are through the data. So if you have very sensitive data in your company that you definitely don't want to get out into the public, then you have a high incentive to pay. If the cyber criminals have data that you don't really care too much about, even if it's leaked, then you're in a much stronger negotiating position and you can pay a much smaller ransom. So the extent to which you can negotiate really depends on the cyber criminal group that you're dealing with and the data that they have stolen from you.
It sounds like a very murky area of negotiations indeed. Fergus Hansen, you mentioned that there's a bit of a sort of policy black hole in terms of the Australian rules and regulations about ransomware at the moment. What would a best practice policy framework look like?
Well, I think everyone around the world is being targeted with ransomware at the moment, but the biggest problem is if you allow the market to continue to grow. So the problem we've got in Australia is that there's a grey area in the law. People are paying ransoms, and because we're paying ransoms and we're a wealthy economy, it's a great market for cyber criminals, so it attracts more cyber criminals and more companies get hit. To overcome that, you basically need to get to the point where Australian businesses are no longer paying ransoms so that it's no longer an attractive market for cyber criminals and they look at other places to make money. The knee-jerk reaction would be, well, we'll just ban ransom payments and that will solve the problem. I think it's a bit more complicated than that because if you're a small to medium-sized business, for example, and you've spent your whole life trying to build up a company and you're faced with the proposition of, you know, paying a ransom and potentially being fined or going to jail or saving your business, lots of people are going to have to make that horrible decision to pay the ransom and save their business because it's their life's work. And the last thing the government would really want to be doing is locking up small to medium business owners because they tried to save their business. So I think we need a sort of bit of a staged approach. The first one, I think, is getting mandatory reporting of all ransomware attacks that can be done privately to the ACSC, which is the Australian Cybersecurity Centre.
So that'd be similar to what's the case for privacy breaches, where you do have to report those to the privacy.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and also I think mandatory reporting privately of ransom payments so that we can have a bird's eye view of how much money is going out the door and whether we're winning or losing this policy issue. And then I think we've got to have a staged approach to banning ransom payments. So you could imagine a situation where you get big companies to you mandate that they can't pay ransoms, and then maybe you could have a process for smaller companies where you provide them with support payments to allow them to recover from ransoms rather than paying for it. I think the insurance market has a role to play here. We need to make sure it's clear in the law that insurance companies can't provide ransom payments as part of an insurance deal. So I think banning the ability for insurance companies to pay ransoms on for companies that are victims of these attacks.
That's interesting. Does that happen at the moment?
Well, anecdotally, that's a part of a growing market because so many companies are being hit. So I think that's a real problem that needs to be fixed. And then the other part of the insurance is insurance for recovery. So making sure that more and more companies have insurance to enable them to cover their losses if they are victims of an attack and have to recover without paying a ransom. So for some companies like Toll, that's obviously going to be an eye-watering amount of money that they're going to need to have covered by insurance. But there needs to be those sort of transition arrangements to get to the end point that we want, which is Australian companies not paying ransoms.
Fergus, you mentioned the Australian Cybersecurity Centre. It's part of the Australian Signals Directorate. How much do we know about the role of government in ransomware situations in Australia at the moment? Does this ASD have the means to disrupt ransomware attacks? Do they get involved in ransomware negotiations when companies are hit?
Well, they have provided, well, have disclosed that they do have the capability, and there's provision for them to go after offshore cyber criminals and disrupt their operations. So that is a capability that is available to them. I think the problem with that is that it's a really, it's a limited tool in the sense that you can disrupt a cyber criminal's systems, computer systems, but they can just get new computer systems and do it, buy a new computer and do it all again. So it's a very temporary disruption and not really a long-term solution to this. The solution is trying to stop the market here in Australia that disincentivizes cyber criminals from coming here in the first place. But they can do it, and we've been told that that's one of the things they do. I don't think it's a standard procedure when companies get hit, though, that they report a cyber crime, a ransomware attack, and suddenly ASD's busting into their systems.
Yeah, interesting. And just finally, Fergus, if there are business operators of any size listening this morning, a little bit worried over their Sunday extra breakfast, thinking, what should I be doing to try and protect my business or organisation from a ransomware attack? What are the best steps to take ahead of the game?
Well, I think every business in Australia is absolutely a potential victim in this situation. It's a really prolific crime at the moment, and if you've got anything that's online, which is pretty much every business in Australia, then you're definitely a potential victim. I think the number one thing you could do is create a backup of your files that you need to operate as a business, and quarantine, separate that from the internet, store it offline, and test those backups regularly. So back up regularly and test them regularly. Lots of companies that do back up their files often find when they have to recover their operations from those files, the backups don't necessarily work. So testing it's a big part. And then I think the other thing is sort of understanding which parts of your data are the most important and potentially the most sensitive, and taking extra steps to protect those pieces of information. So for some companies, their customer databases might be the most important holding that they have. For others, there might be particularly sensitive information that would be very embarrassing, which would therefore make it very hard for them to avoid paying a ransom. So understanding and thinking through which data sets might be the most embarrassing or the most essential to your business operations, and taking extra steps to preserve them or protect them is the other main recommendation I'd have.
All right. Well, I'd better leave it there, Fergus, because I think I've got to go and back up my stuff. So thanks very much for joining us on Sunday Extra this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Fergus Hansen, Director of the International Cyber Policy Centre at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute.